The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Arturia, Avid, Source Elements, and RSBE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by Ashaya and Eli Kranzberg. We're going to be discussing the things we loved at NAMM 2024. Welcome both. So of the three of us, the only person who was actually at the show is you, Eli. So I think we should probably just get a kind of like a quick, I don't know, give us a couple of sentences on what your NAMM experience was like.
Well, you know, I love NAMM. It's my 10th time going. And I think the big, you know, flagship observation about NAMM is just that it's a bit smaller. You know, everyone's expecting it to be a bit smaller. My gut feeling is that it was probably about 30% smaller, both in terms of exhibitors and audience. But they did it really well. They handled it well. Like in a lot of the halls, you know, that are usually packed wall to wall with booths, they had, let's say, like a big food court in the back area, you know, to fill up some of the space. And then, you know, all the aisles were a bit wider, you know, it's like, so they did the best they could to, you know, make the space look as full as possible. But it's definitely smaller, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing.
You went there last year, were you?
No, the last time I went was 2020, right before COVID. And to me, in my mind, this was the first, you know, kind of normal, back to normal NAMM. You know, the other ones were kind of, you know, I don't know. But this was, to me, the first normal NAMM.
Did you get to see Stevie Wonder?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I have in other ones, you know, but you can't really, you know, there's such a crowd around him of his, you know, bouncers and security. Mm-hmm. You can't really get close. But you see this big, like, kind of huddle of people walking through NAMM and, you know, okay, that's Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's a lot more common, actually, is to get the, Stevie Wonder was just here.
Yeah.
You get that a lot. But it's, I've not seen Stevie there, but I don't know, it's probably, four or so years ago. I got to spend some time with Rob Arbatier, who's worked very closely with Stevie for like decades, and does the show with him and stuff, and that was really interesting, just to kind of like get a bit of insight into kind of what that world's like. In a word, basically, it sounds like it's exhausting, because I mean, basically, just kind of Stevie has always been notoriously industrious. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, it's 2 a.m., but Stevie wants to work. So, hey, well, that's what's happening anyway. Never mind. Well, that's not NAMM. That's just its most famous patron, probably. But okay, well, what we're here to do really is to talk about things that we saw. Now, I mean, I was covering news on the site. I was sort of seeing what was going on. My take actually is kind of like, it all looked really positive. We were represented at the show, but not by me this year. What I did see was, and I don't think it's about this show. I think it's about the role of shows like NAMM these days. But I was particularly aware of it, is just how few products announcements there were. And by products announcements, I'm going to rephrase that. Not products announcements, product releases.
Also, what I found striking was that there were a lot of announcements made before NAMM. Like, no, I don't mean the day before, but like weeks before, you know, where normally people would have waited.
That's what I mean,
Yeah.
But people, I mean, there was plenty of announcements of like, here's what we're working on, we're going to release this at some point, da-da-da-da-da. That's fine. Right. And then, I mean, a lot of people getting their release in before NAMM, so they don't get lost in the noise of, there's always a flurry of releases on Thursday, you know, Wednesday and Thursday, and then by Friday it's all over and everyone's announced what they're announcing. But yeah, I mean, there weren't that many, but of the things that we saw, I was quite heartened to see there was some stuff there that I thought was good, you know, which has got to be a thing when you're kind of as jaded
as you are.
No, not as I am, but as it is possible to get.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were some interesting things, and that's an achievement when, you know, the low-hanging fruit has long since gone in the world of production, you know, and to get people's attention to cut through, you've got to do something that's cool, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I thought there were some cool things from what I saw from afar.
Why don't we start there? Tell us about a cool thing that you saw, Ashaya.
Okay, sure. So the Wolf Audio console is quite cool. So for those of us who don't know Paul Wolf, he actually designed the API legacy console, as well as a number of other sort of mic pres and compressors. So he's actually teamed up with a startup company called DCA, which stands for Digitally controlled analog. And together they've established this company called Wolf Audio. Basically, they're introducing a number of products that combine Paul Wolf's analog designs with the DCA digital engineering, which is quite cool. So basically, it's sort of merging the best of the analog and digital worlds in a way that we haven't experienced before, which I think is really, really cool. Eli, did you see the console while you were at NAMM?
No, I didn't get there. Sorry, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful console and you can sort of adjust it. It's adjustable as well. And it's really exciting to see the sort of digital and analog worlds merging together to create something a bit different and sort of new and exciting.
I mean, Paul Wolf, I suppose, might be known to some people as he was the person who built the hardware that originally inspired a couple of sort of modulation products that live on in plug-in form with Softube, the Fix flanger and doubler plugins,
right,
were both based on Paul Wolf designs from like years and years ago. I'm trying to think. I mean, there's always kind of like a couple of sort of what's it called, statement consoles on the show floor, and that's quite nice to see. And it's good that people are still doing that stuff, just because kind of like the customers are less numerous than they used to be for big pieces of hardware like that, but it's great to see it still going on. So this is digitally controlled analog. DCA, I'm sure, stands for digitally controlled amplifier, but you know, so that's not split. You know, but
they're repurposing
it. So this is a recall thing? Is that what you saw? That was the point of the DCA aspect of it, Asher?
Basically, they're just saying that they're kind of merging the two worlds. So it's going to offer sort of digital control, intercommunication, integrated AD-DA conversion and Dante support. And we've kind of been left with that at the moment. So I don't know exactly what that will be, but it sounds kind of exciting and novel.
I mean, the recall thing for analog desks is a nut that people have been trying to crack for a long time. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, the latter sort of Euphonics consoles were sort of really, the CSs, I think they were right the way down that, you know. And apparently they're really good. I've had a very brief go on one once, and I was pretty confused, to be honest. It lost the walk up and you know how it works friendliness of most analog consoles. I was a little bit lost. And I'm sure you'd get over that very quickly, you know. It was just a walk-up thing, but it's the desire is there. Whether or not the desire is backed up by orders is another thing, of course. Because I mean, there's loads of things that I'd really like people to make, but there's rather fewer of them that I'd be prepared to actually buy.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Don't know. It's a cool thing. I didn't really check this out too much though. So recallable analog with provenance. Anything else to say about that one? I mean, if I kind of summed it up,
pretty much. Yeah, I just think it's exciting, and I'm glad that they're working on something like that.
Mm. And you didn't see it, Eli?
No.
Did you? I mean, you said before that kind of like you don't see yourself as a hardware guy, but stonking great console is pretty hard to miss. Did you see anything that took you that got a second look off you when you were on the show floor?
Yeah, I mean, I saw lots of things that I got lots of third and fourth looks, but staying in the line of hardware, the SSL 360 Link with the UC1 from SSL.
That
excites me. That could turn me into a hardware boy. No, but for those of you who don't know, the UC1, it's a control surface that's modeled after the SSL channel strip. So basically like a, you know, one-channel control surface laid out like the SSL, where you have, you know, compression and gating on one side and EQ knobs on the other. And it's a direct mapping, you know, knob-for-knob mapping to control it. And that's all fine and new. That's nothing new in itself. What is new is there... 360 Link technology, which allows you to map third-party plugins to control on that. Now, it comes with some default mappings for the other third-party SSL channel strip plugins, like from Waves and Universal Audio and Plugin Alliance. And, you know, those obviously translate pretty much link for, you know, knob for knob. But where it gets interesting is third-party plugins. Let's say you have a FabFilter C2 compressor and you want to map that. It's really cool the way it works. I got a little demo of it. You load into your channel strip the 360 Link plugin, and then from within there, you load in the third-party plugin that you want to control, and you just kind of drag you know, drag and drop the knobs to you know, I mean, there's two ways of doing it. One, you can assign it from a menu, or you drag and drop. But that's where it gets, I think, interesting to, you know, map third-party plugins. Now, of course, let's say you're mapping a delay plugin, you know, and you're going to have your ratio button, you know, control delay time. I mean, there it could get a bit confusing, but you can do it, and you can save, you know, say you map a delay plugin there, you can save it. So, you know, next time in another project in 6 months when you load in that same delay plugin, you'll have that same mapping. So it's great, you know, for compressors and EQs, because there's knobs that are, you know, already laid out specifically for that. But any type of plugin can be mapped, and it's, yeah, I think, very interesting.
So that's a fantastic addition to, yeah, to the UC1 then, because
yeah,
that's going
absolutely
to sort of encourage a lot more people to use that.
Yeah, because the UC1, I think the price was $799. And, you know, if you have the SSL channel strip plugin, then yeah, it's great. But now, you know, that's obviously a very small percentage of users that have that specific SSL plugin. So it opens it up. He opens this beautiful piece of hardware, and it's really beautifully constructed.
Yeah.
It opens it up now for the rest of us.
You know? I think it's an interesting one, just because I hear what you're saying, Eli, about kind of like, you know, of all of the people who've got SSL channel strip plugins, the proportion who've got the SSL channel yeah strip plugin is going to be a fraction of that
yeah
user base.
Yeah.
I get that. I do think that anyone who drops the money to buy the dedicated hardware from SSL would probably be cutting their nose off to spite their face,
yeah,
I believe
yeah
is the phrase, to not then get the plugin that it controls. So, but what I would say is that for this, for that one-to-one mapping thing, you know, there are plenty of others to choose from. And if you've got you know, the BrainWorks subscription, if you're a UA user, or, you know, I mean, there's a few different ones that are extremely good, and why wouldn't you be able to use it on something that's got the same knobs in the same place?
Exactly. So now you can.
But this comes pre-mapped, though, doesn't it? Just because they've done the mappings for those.
Yeah, for
plugins.
Waves and UA and plugin lines, there's like presets already set up for it. And it should be said, the SSL channel strip plugin itself is not that expensive now. I mean, it what was it, $39 usually, or I mean, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not an expensive plugin. So, yeah, you're going to spend $800 on the hardware. Even comes with it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just after something that has those knobs in that position, then, I mean, something that I've always been interested in, a friend of mine sort of made me aware of it, is the Rock Solid Audio Micro 4K controller, which is this again, you know, those knobs in that position with those color caps, you know. That's great, but I think that's probably selling it slightly short, just because something that I thought was really interesting. I haven't used these SSL controllers, but I've spoken to more and more people who have. And the thing that they're all talking about, and this applies to the fader, the Bank of Eight faders one rather than this one, but they kind of come as, well, they don't come as a pair, but they work very well as a pair, is that people absolutely love the quality of the faders on these.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a thing. I mean, I've spoken to a couple of people who've got rid of other alternative, you know, well-respected controllers because they want those SSL faders.
Yeah, it looks and feels really like you're driving a Cadillac.
Mm.
You know, it's really top line, top shelf. Yeah.
Interesting stuff. I mean, I think that the fact that you can map a, you know, a delay plugin onto it is probably kind of missing the point.
Yeah.
But what it does make me think of is just the fact that very often the spiel accompanying this stuff is, yeah, for those of us who grew up on you know, large format SSL consoles, and I'm thinking those people are getting fewer and fewer every year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't think the argument's any less persuasive, just because if it's such a common thing to find in virtual form, that I think that layout has outlived the hardware and will continue to do so. And
good point. Yeah,
it's not just like a one generation thing who are kind of, you know, being diluted by people who have no direct hands-on experience of that hardware. It's just a format, and it's a really, really common one that isn't going anywhere.
We're all very familiar with
yeah,
it,
yeah,
even if we don't use the hardware.
Yeah, I guess we could say they kind of defined the channel strip, you know, the notion of the channel strip layout,
yeah,
you know, and that's what stuck. You know?
Ever wondered what it's like to mix an entire album for Kanye? Or layering vocals for Chris Brown? Join your hosts, Cash and G, every fortnight as we sit down with some of your favourite artists, producers and engineers to talk everything music. Brought to you by Avid Pro Tools.
That sounds great.
Talking of hardware and the need for hardware controllers, did you see the Stephen Slate Raven MTI-2?
I was there, but I was distracted and I was more interested in trying out the VSX headphones. So I technically saw it, but I didn't really take a close look at it.
But are you familiar with the sort of multi-touch kind of mixing and that sort of thing? Because that's something that really excites me. So I'm not particularly tactile. I don't necessarily need controllers. But this is a massive time saver. So basically, Raven is a multi-touch display with advanced kind of touchscreen capacity. And it works with your DAW and it allows you to tweak DAW settings, but also plugins on the screen as if you're tweaking analog hardware. And this is really cool. There's something called gestures. So basically you can get two fingers, double tap, and it bypasses, enables multiple tracks, for example, or you can swipe left and quickly create new tracks. And it's a really sort of intuitive way of mixing within your DAW.
And this is all new from like compared to the regular Raven?
Well, it's the newest addition to the Raven series. So I imagine some of this are sort of the newer features, but it exists. It existed before that. But you can also do very precise automation as well. So I saw a video where someone was just moving their finger up and down and sort of the Raven will confine the fader to move in very small increments. And so you can just move your finger to make automation adjustments, which is exciting, to be honest. And things like batch commands as well. So quickly add and remove vocal chains and sends with just one button. And all those things that just sort of really save time and make things much more intuitive.
Have you ever had a go on one of these, Asher?
I haven't. No.
It's interesting because I mean, I remember when the original launched. I mean, years ago now, and they were really, really popular. A lot of people, you know, took to them, and the software is pretty mature. You know, the way it works has been around long enough for it's got its devotees, put it that way. But I mean, and this sort of bigger, better resolution. I didn't really dig in too deep onto exactly what the new features were, but for anyone who's interested, what they also said in the information that was out at the time was that if you're interested in one of the old ones, now's a really good time to get one because they're discounting them quite heavily. So anyone who wants to get onto that, then you know it's the time to get the old one if you don't want to go the whole hog on this big, what is it, 4K? Is it this big one?
Possibly, I'd need to check.
Don't quote me on that, but yeah. But anyway, no, interesting product, and it's been around a long time, which in my book is a good thing because it means that it works properly.
Eli, is that something that would interest you in for mixing?
You know, I don't think so. You know, I have as I'm sure you do, I have Logic Remote on the iPad, and how often have you used mixing with your fingers on the faders there? It doesn't really appeal to me. Have you done that, a lot of that?
I haven't actually, but to be honest, I think there's a slight difference between the iPad and a sort of much larger
screen.
But yeah, I get what you're saying completely.
You know, about 10 years ago, I was doing videos on Cakewalk. And Sonar, and Cakewalk sent me this big, huge touch monitor. You know, it was on a PC, and I never took it out of the box.
My experience of these kind of things is, I've got no problem with touchscreen control for buttons. Faders, you lost me completely. And the thing that turned me off it, to be honest, was remote apps for digital consoles, for live sound consoles. And while I'd much rather have one than not have one, because it gives you that mobility to be able to go around the room and do, you know, but as a way of mixing, it's absolutely horrible. And what's more, just walking around, just looking up your own nose in the reflection on a, you know,
that's never a good look.
Just walk out to bright sunshine and go, I have no idea. But anyway, we digress. I should probably pick one, shouldn't I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, things that I saw, I think I'd probably like to talk about possibly the Heritage Audio i73 range. Did you see these?
They're brilliant. Yeah.
Did you see them in the flesh, Eli? Did you go anywhere near Heritage?
No, sorry, I didn't make it there.
Yeah. It's I mean, I know their hardware. I've reviewed one a Dyed Bridge compressor on the site quite a while ago. You know, you see hardware, and you just with especially with anything with Marconi knobs or something like that. It's like, okay, I want to turn one of those knobs, and then I'll tell you what I think. No problem, yeah. No problem at all. It's, well, it's the handshake, isn't it? You know, and if it feels if it's and some wobbly clicky thing, it's like, oh no. But if it's got a nice reassuring thug to it, good word, thug. Just made that one up.
That is a good word.
But these, they look very good. The thing I couldn't believe on these was the pricing, because they look very reasonable.
How much?
Well, now you're, oh dear. not that much, and there's something on the site. So I'll just scroll down here, because I really have not got this stuff in my... the big one is about 900 US. The other one, how much is the little one? Oh, I can't find that. They're all coming in under 1,000, and quite significantly so in the less expensive ones. So, you know, but they do. They've got a 73 style preamp.
That's very cool. I'm just looking at it now, and it looks very cool, because I love Neve preamps on my voice. You know,
nice. Voice. And it's, yeah, I just. It's just that all works, you know. I mean, I'm doing that the hard way, you know. So I mean, I've got in two separate units and 2U of rack space, I've got basically what one of these does. So, you know, it's like, who wouldn't want that? But it's not just some you know, attractively priced hardware, because it's got some software behind it. It's got sort of a DSP aspect to it, and they've gone a little bit further than just building an all-analog box. This is a proper piece of hardware.
Yeah, so. Very nice.
Okay, so I mean that's my one. I mean, good company as well. Actually, I have to say I like what they do. For their outboard stuff, the only compromise, as far as I'm concerned, is that you're dealing with something with an external power supply, which for rack gear I don't actually mind that much, you know. And I get it, because it's an obvious saving, because a power supply is an expensive thing to do, and building them inside the case is more complicated than putting it a long way away and having slightly, you know, slightly easier time with some aspects of designing it. So, you know, I mean, I can deal with that. I really can. I had no issues whatsoever with that compressor that I tried. I thought it was a lovely piece of hardware. So, yeah, all right. Where did we start? We started with you, didn't we, Cher? So why don't you choose another?
Sure. So have you seen the Yamaha Seek Track?
No. Is that?
I didn't know how to pronounce it. Apparently, it's...
Oh, this? No, I do know. Now I've seen an image of it. What? Explain to me. I didn't check it out. What is it? What does it do?
So it's basically an all-in-one compact music station for laying down ideas and beats and that sort of thing. But it's actually, there's more you can do with it than meets the eye, which is handy. So it's a sort of small rectangular piece of equipment. It comes in white and orange or black. I prefer the black one personally. And it's got a drum section on the left, a synth and sampler section in the middle, and a sound design and effects section as well. And with the app, you can actually go into deeper kind of editing and sound design as well if you want to get into it. And it's quite cool. So things that I like, there's a button where you press and you can actually record your own samples, which is handy. You can actually load your own samples as well using the app. And you can actually trigger a visualizer using MIDI triggers to create sort of visual effects that go along with the music that you're creating. And there's also a thing called a dynamic tutorial as well. So you can learn while you're kind of playing with the hardware, you can actually learn how to use it. So if you don't like reading manuals, that sort of thing, you can just get stuck in and learn how to use it. The only thing that I don't particularly like is how small the buttons are. So I can't really imagine myself using sort of making music with those tiny buttons. But again, I'd have to try it to see.
This is a really good point you make here, just because, yeah. To give you an idea, I mean, visually, it reminds me a little bit of the Teenage Engineering OP1, if you're familiar with that thing, which looks a little bit like a really, really stylish Cassiotone VL1 from like 1983 or something, you know?
Right.
I mean? But like a little, little sort of like about a foot long little desktop unit. And I've come across this a few times. Eli, I mean, tell me what you think about this as well. There seems to be a lot of stuff of people making stuff really small and portable. And I don't want stuff that's that small.
The feature set strikes me like it'll be great for live performance.
Yes.
However, if it, you know, live performance specifically is where you'd want big tactile knobs where you're not going to make mistakes. You know,
well, something that's not going to get dragged off the table by the weight of its lead,
too.
You know?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing on a, you know, for a home studio to put it on your desk in front of you next to your keyboard. Who cares? I mean, you know, it's, when I say who cares, I mean, you know, you're punching in and out, you have MIDI, it doesn't matter. But yeah, for live performance, it doesn't strike me as, you know, practical.
Having visualizer stuff built into it. So what this is like, you connect up using a video connection up to a projector and do like live visuals to your set.
It sounds cool.
Yeah, there are 2D, 3D objects that you can sort of trigger and customize, but they look very sort of low kind of bit rate. They don't look very modern.
Blocky computer graphics along to your music. This would be like going to see Hawkwind in 1994.
It feels like it's aimed at kind of techno DJs or something.
Yeah,
people that like the sort of retro
get some
vibe.
Fractal Mandelbrots up there, and you know.
Yeah. Well,
techno DJs with some live real time input to, you know, a bit of a performance aspect to it.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, but it's again, those buttons are sort of putting me off.
It's an interesting category, and I mean, great if it. Ed, I don't suppose you went up to Yamaha, did you? They're sort of upstairs.
Yeah, no,
I got a whole floor. They go big at NAMM. They really do. They're not messing about. It's a cool place to go and check some stuff out. And certainly, it's a good way to get away from the crowds because it's so big. So, you know.
Yeah.
But they put on concerts up there and everything, and you know, yeah, it's amazing. Don't know what I think about that one, but it's probably not for me anyway, really, because if it hasn't got full size keys on it, I'm out. I've tried a couple of things recently that were sort of like the mini keys variety analog synths, and I was thinking, yeah, I could get by with that. It'd be okay. Touched it, horrible. It was just like I was out. As soon as I touched the keys, I went, I couldn't even, no.
Yeah, but, it could do with being a substantially bigger.
I mean, it is a way to keep costs down, though, isn't it? If you can sell the idea that something's really small, then, you know, it's got to hit the production costs. So if it becomes a desirable thing that's also cheaper, that's win-win. But not for me.
No, I don't think for me either.
Aturia has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Aturia.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
You know what I was thinking? Why don't I do just a quick little roundup of some of the software things I saw at NAMM that I thought were pretty cool.
Okay.
Well, first, our friends at iLock, they've got some nice new things. Shopify, you can now buy your plugins on Shopify. And for the Pace customers, like the developers that sell through Shopify, they can deliver the licenses directly to the iLock accounts. So that's kind of a cool ease of use thing for the end user. They also have rainbow colored iLocks now, limited edition, and they're selling those for the proceeds to go to Ed Gray's family, who many users will know is a long stay, fixture at Pro Tools, at Avid rather, who died recently. So they're doing that rainbow colored iLocks. And they're also involved in the audio developer conferences. They go to them frequently. So iLock is not going away anytime soon. A couple of other cool things I saw. Blue Cat Audio, they have a few new things happening. Now, also their friend of the blog, Guillaume, is a super nice guy. He's got Fader Hub, which is meant for kind of like long distance remote connecting and jamming and playing. Now, the distance obviously is going to affect the latency. So we did a fun test about a month or so before NAMM. Him and I tried to connect, and he's in Paris and I'm in Montreal. So are we talking like 4,000 or 5,000 kilometers?
Yeah, fair way.
The latency was unusable. It was like a quarter note latency, but the connection worked. But he's got some nice new things that he was showing at NAMM. So he's got Fader Hub, but he's got a new thing now called Free Connect, because he's got a plugin called Connector, which is the app that he has for connecting long distance. Fader Hub is a way of kind of a bit of a mixer interface for controlling the multiple streams when you're connecting. But he has Connector. Now he's got something called Free Connect. So if you own Connector and you want to connect with a buddy who doesn't have it, they just need the free version. It's a scaled-down version. So it allows you to connect with users who don't have it. And that's, like I say, Free Connect. And it, you know, I think a nice kind of rounds out the workflow nicely. But he's got another really cool new thing coming out that he showed me, which, like, blew my mind, called Spinal Vibe. And it's, you know, kind of like a Leslie rotary simulation.
Oh, yes,
But with, you know, knowing Guillaume, with some twists. So he's got 3 rotary speakers, not 2, and they can all be controlled independently, and you assign different areas of the frequency spectrum to each of the 3 rotating speakers. So imagine you have the upper, the highs going through one rotary speaker at one speed, the mids going through a different type at a different speed in a different direction, and the third, so it's just mind-blowing.
So there aren't any other plugins that do that with 3 rotary speakers?
Well, there's lots of Leslie emulation ones, but to have 3 independently controlled, rotational speakers and that can be synced to tempo, and it looked really like I could see myself spending some time with that plugin, having some fun.
Fantastic.
Some other software things I saw. IK Multimedia has a new piano instrument called Pianoverse, and they're dipping their toes in the subscription water. I think their Tone, do they have subscription for some of their Tonex libraries? I'm not sure. But anyway, Pianoverse is a new piano plugin, and they have kind of like a host plugin, called a host for it called Pianoverse. And then they sell the individual pianos for like $99 each. And right now, I think there's 6 pianos that are, you can host within this Pianoverse plugin, and they're like 18 gigabytes each. So they're big, fully sampled instruments. And it's a cool interface, kind of like their sample tank interface. You have a couple of tabs with effects and mixing and, different things. But they're also offering a subscription service where I think you pay maybe $10 a month or something, and you get all the models plus the upcoming models. So there are currently, I think there are plans for 8, and maybe 6 are out already. There's going to be 2 more, and then, of course, there'll be more after that. So it kind of looks fun. I'm probably going to do some videos on that for Groove 3 in the next little while. It looks like a nice, fun instrument. Another cool thing, kind of a, but like kind of buzz going around NAMM about it, this thing called Ace Studio, an AI vocal synthesizer. Now, there's a lot of them around, and who knows who's going to be the winner at the end of the day, but it looks really cool. It's got a piano roll type of grid. You type in your words, and there's different vocal, different types of female or male vocalists that sing the words, basically, and it's really good. You can put all kinds of inflections in with, pitch bend and transition.
That's what's impressive as well, is the inflection thing, right?
Yeah,
it's becoming
really cool.
More and more realistic.
And, you can generate harmonies, and you can put a chord track in, and, that kind of stuff. But it's pretty impressive, I have to say. And a lot of people, everyone was saying, man, you got to check. Did you see the vocal synthesizer? And everyone's kind of whispering about it. It's very cool.
Yeah. So I'd be interested to see how many new songs are released with AI vocals, if they're becoming more and more realistic.
What I'm thinking it would be useful for me, I'm not a singer. If I'm doing some writing, man, I want to get a singer in, I can lay out like a demo, just to get a singer in to sing it for real, but, have him or her kind of, have a mock-up,
Yeah, that would definitely work for me as well, because I write a lot, not just for myself, for other people. So I can see that working in,
I can see that
in
being
my workflow.
Working.
Yeah. Julian, is it something that you would particularly use?
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I'm just kind of like, if I want a vocal, then I want someone to sing it. I don't know. However accurately it does it. It's a little bit like I've played with string libraries before, and it's all about getting on top of kind of like how to control the articulations. And if you get on top of that, you can get a convincing performance.
Yeah, I'm
together.
With you. Like, I'd want the singer to sing it, but let's say the singer isn't a great reader, and I'm not going to be able to sing it for her. Here's a way of doing a mock-up,
demos as well. If it works well, then that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It's true. I suppose what I'm saying is that if you're looking for realistic results rather than placeholder, because if you just need to carry a melody, then just kind of like some kind of top line chart, or just some lyrics, and just like the melody on any instrument of your choice is enough to convey the idea about how it works.
Yeah, also it depends on the genre. Someone doing electronic music where maybe they just want like a vocal hook, where it's not, sort of deep, expressive vocals.
Just, being briefly cynical, if we want something that sounds like, a real vocal, then considering how tastes have changed in terms of exactly how heavy you can go on processing and how hard you can tune stuff and things, if you want something that sounds like a vocal sung by a human these days, the lower end of that bar is kind of like pretty low, actually, and pretty accessible by a vocal synthesizer.
Yeah, there's a lot of electronic music that would completely get away with AI vocals.
Yes, completely.
Yeah.
You know what I think is going to be interesting is that, there's maybe like half a dozen voices that they have, and they'll probably be adding more, but they sound really great to me or to us now, but like, you know, over time there'll be lots of records are released probably using these, and it'll probably be immediately identifiable. Oh yeah, that's the AI vocal synth. That's the Betty voice. You know.
Come on though, won't it be a case of people will be doing celebrity add-on packs and reverse engineering AI versions of well-known artists' vocals that they can't protect legally.
Yeah, that's
so. You know, I mean, yeah. my fingers crossed for that kind of, you know, that Tom Waits Bob Dylan combo pack. You know,
yeah, interesting.
But you know what I mean? It's just kind of someone's going to go, okay, you know, you want a middle period McCartney vocal pack. There you go. You know, so it's Christmas. Okay, do a discount deal on Mariah.
Yeah, it could get messy.
Oh, I think everything's going to get, but whatever.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN-equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
You know, one more thing I wanted to say about NAMM this year. You know, a lot of major kind of paradigm changes, they happen slowly over time. They don't happen overnight. And what am I talking about? MIDI 2.0. Now, it's been around for a couple of years. It's been announced. But, you know, just like kind of like Thunderbolt, I mean, they announced it. It doesn't mean that there's a bunch of hardware that supports it the next day. But I find every NAMM, and I haven't been in 4 years, there's a little more and more and more of MIDI 2.0 stuff going on. And this year, you know, they had a big MIDI 2.0 booth, like a presentation booth with like a seating for like a little audience. They had different presentations every hour or two. And there's more and more products that are getting into MIDI 2.0. I saw a nice demo of a little control surface, or not control surface, but a tactile performance surface. I guess I'm not going to call it a keyboard, but a performance surface. I just made that term up, but I like it. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, Exquise. It's Exquise, a French company, Exquise. But there's more and more happening with MIDI 2.0. Like, you know, it's just physically, it's not like a little tiny booth with a little banner. Like, they had like a big presence there, and there's more and more hardware and more presentations. And it's slowly but surely, like I said, there's not going to be any one moment where, okay, it's here. But, you know, like Logic, for example, supports all the MIDI 2.0 protocols now. And, you know, gradually more and more are there more and more of these hardware products. It's happening. Yeah. Like, it's happening in slow motion, but it's happening.
For those of us that don't know, what are the differences between MIDI and MIDI 2.0?
Well, there's going to be a lot finer resolution. And, you know, you're not married to the 127 degree step, you know, steps. There's a lot finer resolution. There's going to be things like, Julian, you're talking about orchestral arrangement. Articulation IDs are going to become part of the MIDI spec, where it's going to be a common agreed upon, you know, articulation ID type numbers for certain articulations. And now everyone kind of does it in a proprietary way, but there's going to be articulation. And I think that's going to be fantastic.
I mean, the thing about this is, I mean, I can remember many, many years ago seeing a magazine cover that said, Zippy, is this the new MIDI? And I'm thinking, well, that's the only time I ever heard about it, so I'm thinking not. But the thing about this, though, is that it is an extension of the existing MIDI protocol, not a replacement for it. So what it does is it's the protocol that's used is negotiated.
Yes.
So basically, you connect two things up, and basically it figures out, can you do MIDI 2? No, in that case you do MIDI 1, and it can sit on top. Also, it does this kind of property exchange where it can do things like, as I understand it, like things like controller mappings and stuff like that. So it's a lot more than just patch recall. I mean, we used to have SysX. Well, we still have SysX. It's just that, you know, it's kind of not the most user-friendly thing. and because that is kind of, it's largely forgotten about. It's an interesting one. Tim Carroll's just been kind of made, I don't know, like head of this, hasn't he? Former Avid head of Focusrite. Okay. So, you know, that's it's certainly got the attention of the right. And these things happen slow. I mean, I saw an update about AES-70, which I remember writing a thing on the blog about 5-6 years ago, which is a control protocol extension of like AES-67, so you can do parameter control. And I went, oh, this will be awesome. And it's like, you know, it's these things happen on these kind of non-proprietary platforms. They happen at a different speed.
Yeah. Another thing, Ashaya, that's interesting with MIDI 2.0 is from a performance aspect, you know, hitting a key on a keyboard, rather than just hitting it, you know, and getting a velocity to note on, note off, you can sort of push your finger in. I know we have aftertouch now, but move your finger around and get it to send different MIDI messages, like bends. You know, you bend your finger into the note and it'll generate. So it's a lot more expressive real-time controls. But MIDI Association is on top of things, and they had a big booth, and I'm encouraged that this is really happening now.
Yeah, that's great.
It's interesting because you're right, Eli. It's one of these things that doesn't make a difference all at once.
Yeah, you know, Ashaya, one of the interesting things with MIDI 2.0 in Logic is, you know, when you're looking in the event list, you used to see values from, you know, 1 to 127. Now it's expressed as a percentage. You can switch it in the display settings to go back to the old way. But rather than seeing, you know, 33 or 72, you're going to see a percent, which is a lot. You know, it's a more open-ended kind of way of representing the values because the scale underneath can change.
Right, yeah.
So it's an interesting protocol.
Oh, see, so it's relative, so that if it's expressing it and being converted, then in that case, absolutely, yeah. If the underlying resolution changes, that still applies.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But yeah, so you'll see like 32% and whatever.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
and it's easier to understand.
It's much easier to understand.
Yeah, it is, yeah. In fact, it would have been, you know, MIDI 1.0 could have been, you know, effective like that too. But anyway, they had 127.
Well, MIDI 1 had a good
one. Yeah, yeah. one other new thing, if there's time, and one other new thing.
Absolutely.
Eventide, newfangled audio, you know, that's kind of associated with Eventide, has a new plugin out called Recirculate. And I don't want to say a delay plugin, everyone's going to say, oh, another delay plugin. But it's really cool. It's a feedback echo plugin, which allows you to get inside the feedback loop and generate some processing in there, you know, like granular. You can get the echoes granular and modulation, that kind of thing. But it's got built-in ducking, like kind of one knob, simple ducking, built-in gating, built-in compression, all in the feedback loop. So I don't want to say it's like earth-shatteringly new, but it's just very well laid out to get really cool feedback echoes that you can have, you know, very intuitive control over, and it's a really fun plugin, right?
It kind of reminds me of Air Delay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you tried that? You can do those sort of things.
I haven't, but Newfangled Audio is they've got a kind of modern take on the GUI, you know. So instead of seeing a knob that says, you know, feedback or this or that, it's a lot more tactile and intuitive to kind of jump in and just sort of create. So it's fun. Recirculate.
We've got some stuff coming up on the site about that.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah. I did a video for them on it, actually, full disclosure, you know, for their release, and I had a lot of fun with it.
Excellent. It feels to me like we should move to Finds of the Week, because we've had quite a thorough look around. Before we go, is there anything else that I particularly want to talk about on the list, or at least give a shout out to before we move on?
Did you try the Beyer Dynamic DT77 Pro closed-back headphones, Eli?
No, I have the DT770s, but are these, I guess, the new...
Question, Eli, do yours have a captive lead?
Yeah.
Captive leads have no place on a pair of headphones, and this is what I saw on those. They do some alternative...
What I meant to say was, what's a captive lead?
One that you can't take off.
This has a single-sided cable, so you can actually take it on and off, and it doesn't get twisted and tangled, which can be quite handy.
And you can replace it when it gets broken.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, absolutely. I saw that and I went, oh, yeah, mini XLR, perfect. I mean... Mm-hmm.
And they're small things, but they make a difference, don't they?
They really do. Mm. They really do. Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what, I think we should quit while we're ahead. Let's move on to Find of the Week.
Let's. Eli, what's your Find of the Week?
My Find of the Week is my wife got me a fantastic present for NAMM. Now, anyone who's ever been knows that you have to have water with you all the time. Otherwise, you're going to lose your voice after 3 hours because it's loud, you're talking. And, you know, so I usually, you know, you get a bottle of water, those plastic bottles, you just refill it at the water fountain, you stick it in your pocket, and you got this door dorky looking water bottle sticking out of your pocket. My wife got me this really cool little flat red water plastic flask. It's so much more elegant. It just fits in my pocket. She didn't want me walking around with a bottle of water sticking out of my jacket pocket.
Not very stylish, is it?
But she got this little red flask, and you fill it up at the water fountains, and it really made my NAM so much more enjoyable. That's my find of the week on Amazon.
Yeah, I totally get how I get excited about things like water bottles and flasks as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you could put something other than water in it, but that wasn't the point of it. It was just, to have water handy, and it saved my voice. But
yeah, your wife sounds thoughtful.
She is.
Julian, what's your find of the week?
Mine's a Key 7. So Key, makers of the Key 3, great pair of speakers and ones that I've heard quite a lot, and they're really, really good, have released or announced, I don't know if they're available yet, maybe they are, I don't know, but a smaller version, less expensive. They're not cheap. I don't think the Key 11 make anything that's cheap, but they're less expensive than the 3s, which were quite a lot of cash. The idea of these, if you're not familiar with them, is that they are full-range cardioid speakers, so they use some clever tech and multiple drivers pointing in different directions so that you can get a cardioid response all the way down into the deep bass, which means that you're not throwing bass around omnidirectionally around a room, which means that they're more forgiving of the acoustic environment they're in, which sounds fine. And then you hear it and you go, oh, that really works. And it really is impressive. It's very impressive indeed. Walk behind a Key 3 playing something bassy and you just listen to it disappear and go, wow, that's amazing. So yeah, I think they look very, very impressive. It's doing the same thing with less, but apparently it works extremely well.
Is it smaller? So,
smaller. It's got fewer drivers. It's considerably smaller.
Okay.
And it costs less money, which is, it's win-win-win, really. Yeah. So yeah, I look forward to hearing those as and when I can get into the same place as a pair.
Brilliant.
Shay, what about you? So what's yours?
Yes, so another thing that was at NAMM as well, that they look quite snazzy, to be honest. So the Solidome are sort of egg-shaped chairs that are designed to give a full-body listening experience to the person that's sitting in the chair. And so they're supposed to be good for sort of enjoying immersive music. They've got a sort of, the distinctive sort of shape, the egg shape, is to create a perfect acoustic environment, according to them. And they're just sort of fun looking chairs that they've got one that's a kid sized and sort of more adult sized, and they're for gaming as well, and something called sound healing as well. So immersive sound therapy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Eli or Julian.
I haven't.
Apparently it's a thing.
Wouldn't all that cushioning kind of affect, absorb frequencies and affect what you're
hearing? There's a white paper you can download. So there you go. If you've got the inclination, read the white paper and it will tell you all about it.
Mm. But they're not cheap.
They're not cheap. And I mean, I'm sorry, they look so 60s.
Yeah, they do. That's a cool one.
I said before, the thing, it looks like something you'd expect to see a Bond villain sitting in the smoking
hat. Yeah.
So, yeah, after the tour of your base. But anyway, there we go. They look fun. I mean,
look comfortable.
What I don't understand is exactly, I'd want to see where the speakers are exactly. And do they actually use the word immersive?
Yes, they do.
Just because immersive suggests a format, and you clearly the speakers can be above you and around you and behind you, but the one place they can't put them is in front of you, which would be an issue with some formats.
Yeah, so I don't know how they do that, but they definitely use the word immersive.
Maybe they don't, because immersive is a non-specific kind of word, But no, it looks like a fun thing, and if somebody's got a need for some kind of, somebody top off their Bond villain lair.
Then these are perfect.
Excellent. All right. Oh, well, that's all we've got time for this week. So thank you to Eli. Thank you to Asher. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.